Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.
Sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host. Today, our show topic is we're going to interview Dr. Ned Holsting of Father and Family. He's the founder of the organization. Fathers and Family is a nonprofit organization out of Boston. They improve the lives of children and strengthen society by protecting the child's right to love and care of both parents after separation or divorce. Good afternoon, Doctor.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you for joining the program today. I guess to begin with, we can begin with by talking about yourself. Tell us about how you started this organization, and then talk about the mission of your organization as a whole. But before we begin, anybody want to call in? You can call in at 347-324-3460, 347-324-3460, and feel free to call in to ask questions. I guess welcome to the program, Doctor, and I guess we can begin with you and God, tell us about yourself.
Well, thank you. It's just great to be on your show. I'm a divorced dad. It happened ages ago when my wife decided that she wanted a different life than the one she had. I had a pretty good outcome, but along the way, I realized, there's an awful lot of cases here where what's happening in family court is not very fair to one of the parties, usually the dad, and usually mm-hmm. the children, but not always. Sometimes it's the mom, so I started talking to other fathers who'd been through this, and began to open my eyes a little bit. Started doing a lot of reading, talking to a lot of people, and I decided we needed to start a national organization to bring fairness to the family courts, to reform them. And our central idea is that children will do best and deserve to have both of their parents in their lives, lots of time with both parents. Neither parent should be able to claim more than half of the time of the child. There will be exceptions, and there will be some parents who aren't fit, and there will be some families where this idea doesn't work according to either of the parties. Those cases, they can mutually agree for a different arrangement. But if you've got a fit parent mm-hmm. and they want to have a lot of time with that child, who is to stand between them and God and say you can't have that?
Wow. And taking into account, I think we had the discussion regarding not only just the family economic impact, also to businesses, but I guess looking at as a whole, once a couple divorces, there is a financial strain on especially usually the mother, because then they have to now deal with collecting child support. Their lifestyle is going to be less than where they were, because then now you have additional expenses that you don't have a backup plan for. You don't have that additional income. Some women do, have good salaries and good jobs, and it's no impact. But on the average, it's always going to be an impact. Having a child, you're dealing with child care, it's still going to affect your families. And taking that into account, I know the court's always going to side having women as the primary caretaker. In your organization, do you kind of coach the fathers to try to get more involved, or try in this emotional process of getting divorced or dealing with child care issues? Your company, your organization go in and kind of help in per se, kind of help advise? How do you guys
not really
normally...
We would love to be a human service organization and to help people out in their individual mm-hmm. cases, but we would need a budget of $50 million a year to be able to help
wow.
all the dads out there who need it. What we do instead is we are trying to reform the laws, reform the traditions and policies of the family courts, and also the state agencies that are around the family courts. And typically that's the Child Support Enforcement Agency. It's also the Children's Protective Services, which go by various names in various states. Mm-hmm. And we fundamentally, I mean, there's one thing you said that is really we disagree with, which is, although it's been true in the past that the courts almost always gave primary physical custody of children to the mom, we're saying that that's a thing of the past. It's an anachronism. It's outgrown its usefulness. And what the children need and what they do best with and what's fairest to the adults is that the child's time should be amply split between the two parents. The notion that the child has to be almost entirely with just one parent is just, it's old think. It grew out of a time when America was totally agrarian, where 98% of people lived on farms. And if there was a divorce, then what happened is that people lived many miles, when they separated, the only choice was to go back to your parents' farm, many miles away over muddy, rutted roads. And sharing the children just wouldn't work. But today it can work. And it's what children want, and it's what works best for children. And increasingly it's happening, but we have to push that along faster. Now, you also mentioned something else, which is that the financial implications are like an earthquake to the average couple. And particularly for small businesses and professional people who have small practices, whether that be doctors, lawyers, accountants, pharmacists, what have you, the results of what the family courts typically do can be catastrophic for the small businessman or professional. I would say that there are the two most common causes of bankruptcy of small businesses is, number one, undercapitalization, and number two is divorce. The proprietor being engaged in a divorce. And when there's a couple of reasons for this. One is that a very common one is that the courts in a divorce split the assets. So let's just take an example. Typical small business. Let's say the business is valued at $400,000 of market value, and let's say that a person owns this business outright. Let's say it's the father's business. And let's suppose they've got $200,000 of equity in their house, so their total net worth of their family is the $400,000 in the business plus $200,000 in the house, and that's about it, maybe a little bit in the car, a few other assets. And so they've got $600,000 of net worth. So, but let's suppose, and this is very common in small business, that this man can only take, let's say, $50,000, $60,000 a year out of this business. Well, what's going to happen? What's going to happen in family court is that the judge is going to divide the assets in half. So the judge is going to say, mom gets $300,000 and dad gets $300,000 of assets. Well, that means mom gets the house, and that gives her $200,000 of assets. Where's dad going to get the other $100,000 to pay her with? He's only bringing home, let's say, $50,000 or $60,000 a year out of this business, and that's all he can bring out of this business. He can't extract any more cash out of it. If he could have, he would have been doing it all along. So he has no. So he's got to pay her $100,000 for her to get her share of the equity in the marriage. How's he going to do that? The only thing he can do is sell a business. It's a forced sale. Does not do well in the sale. And now where does this leave him? It leaves him, first of all, with no income, with a child support obligation to pay, and also no place to live because mom owns the house. He will realize, if he's lucky, after the cost of sale and so on, he will realize, and if they're able to pay him in cash for the business, most buyers don't, they give you paper. So he's got a trickle of money coming in, only half of what he used to get coming in, dependent on the good business abilities of the people who bought the business, because if they don't do well, then they default on the note. So this may sound complicated, but if there are business people listening out there, this is the second most common cause of bankruptcy in America. And the other thing to keep in mind is that divorce comes along unexpectedly for one of the partners in most cases. And this is particularly true for men. Men don't see it coming. And contrary to the common myth, it is women who file for about 70% of divorces. So a lot of men, when I tell them the facts of life about what happens to a small business in divorce, a lot of them say, well, thank goodness, I don't have to worry about that because I have no intention of divorcing my wife. And they don't realize that 70% of the divorces are actually filed by women and that it is extremely common where a man just doesn't see it coming, has no inkling that it is coming.
Wow. That's really amazing. Taking that into account, I mean, the impact of business, I think the drawback for really men in that type of situation, of course, everything will get split down the middle, and once it's settled, it settles. But they will have the right to go back to a court and say, which is going to cost them a lot of money on attorneys and so forth, and petition the court and wait months and maybe take a course of a year to get a readjustment on, especially with child support, when he doesn't have the job. But in the meantime, I've seen some cases, while they're going through this process, he has no income. That order still stands until that order is modified. So it's always in the best interest, if your income has dropped and are you unemployed, you still have your obligation still going to be out there. And I've seen some men will catch up when their tax returns come back around. Then they get back in the positive. However, you know, sometimes to go back for these modifications can take almost a year because you're really going to have to
They can take forever.
Court.
And that's a huge problem that you're pointing to. I totally agree with it. It's just not good enough to say for the courts to say, oh, this is a fair system because, you know, if you don't like the result, you can always appeal it. That just doesn't work in practice. If the original result is one-sided, and so often it is these days, it used to be one-sided against women, and now in the last 15 to 20 years, it tends to be one-sided against men. Of course, there are many exceptions to this. And I get it, lots of angry women, lots of women respond with anger when they hear this, and on a call-in radio show, I'm always getting angry calls from women who say, well, you know, that son of a gun hasn't made a child support payment in 3 years, et cetera. And they're right, and that's terrible. But we're talking about the system. We're talking about the court system. We're not talking about individual sin. We're not talking about individual failure to step up to the plate and be a good person. Because it is the court system that is supposed to promote justice. You know, the ministry is going to have to cure the human heart that abandons his or her children or family. But it is up to us to cure an unjust system of law that puts one of the parties at a severe disadvantage. There's just no excuse for that.
Yeah, and I can see, I mean, I'm not advocating that, you know, a person shouldn't miss out on the obligation. Yeah, you need to take care of your obligation. But on the other hand, if you really think about it, the guy can always recover quickly than the ex-wife, because now she has child care and the other expenses that's facing her every single week. Yeah, the guy can recover. However,
I don't agree. I think it all depends on job skills. Absolutely not. When a woman is divorced or separated from a man who has an income, has a steady income, and is not a person who's going underground, the state will attach that income. It will be garnished out of the paycheck before the paycheck is ever even written, and it will be automatically sent to the woman. So she will get tax-free money. In most states, for middle-class people, the amount of money is pretty good. And if she has her own job skills, she will be poorer than she was before. He will also be poorer than he was before. But she will be at least as well off as he is, or close to it. Now, now she repartners. If she either remarries or lives together with another man who has an income, that will not cause her child support income to go down at all. She still gets her child support in exactly the same amount as she got it before. And so she will now be better off than she was during the marriage. She actually has a financial incentive. If she has another man waiting in the wings who earns an income, she will be better off financially by leaving her husband and partnering with a new man than she had been before, because now she has her child support, she has her personal income, and she has her new partner's income.
Wow. And I can see with the states, you know, I'm looking at the judges, and they're always going to go with the mother, and I see what the states say, hey, make the guy do what we can to make sure he pays so the mother don't come to us and ask for assistance. Do you think that's the case, or it's just that one side, they just really just think, hey, the child needs to be with the mom?
Well, first of all, the old-fashioned judges still are saying, oh, child has to be with mom. So as far as custody is concerned, they're still saying, okay, mom, you get the kids, and dad, you get every other weekend. And if mom chooses to interfere with that, even though I, as the judge, ordered it, I'm not going to enforce it. And that's just how it is in an awful lot of places. Now, it's changing, and it has been changing, but it's changing very slowly. And our job as a movement is to say, this is not good for children, and it's not fair to adults. And we're going to change it. And that's what our organization, fathersandfamilies.org, that's what we do. And we're having success in a lot of states pushing this ball forward, but we have a long way to go. And if there are, and by the way, our supporters are not just divorced and separated fathers. We've got tons of second wives. We have, or stepmothers. We have tons of sisters of men. We have tons of grandmothers of the children. We have just tons of support from among women, because any woman who is close to a man to whom this has happened knows that it's not working fairly, and they're completely in our camp. So this is not the boys against the girls. This is, let's make a better life for children, and let's do something that's fair for adults.
Wow. That's amazing. In your organization itself, do you publish a lot of literature kind of on your website to say, hey, this is a case scenario? Because I know you have court cases. You have a lot of information, news throughout the entire country. How do you gather all this information?
Let me tell you, it pours in over the Internet every day.
Oh, my gosh.
We get calls from people all over the country every day. We get emails from people all over the country every day. We have about 50,000 people around the country. Every time they see an article in their local newspaper on our issues, they email it to us. A court decision in their state, they email it to us. Columnists who write about it, it gets emailed to us. And, of course, we take our own steps to follow what's happening. So this is an area that's in turmoil around the country. Some of it's going in the wrong direction, and some of it's going in the right direction. I would say, in general, it's two steps in the right direction and then a step and a half backwards, then two steps in the right direction, then a step and a half backwards.
What do you say in the wrong direction, and then also in the same breath, what do you say in the right direction? What are they doing really wrong, the judges or the system itself?
Well, the biggest single issue is sticking with the old notion that the child needs only one parent, and making that parent always be the mom, even when mom is not a very good parent. So, you know, this is a problem at two levels. The first level is children long for and love and desire and eagerly want to have time, a lot of time, with both of their parents. That's what kids want. Every study shows that. So that's the first level mistake, is to deny children that and give them only one parent. Then the second mistake is to always make it mom, even if she's not the best parent. Most moms are wonderful parents. Most dads are wonderful parents. But not all moms are wonderful parents, and not all dads are wonderful parents. And so you find kids who are put in the sole custody of moms who beat them, or sole custody of moms who ignore them, or sole custody of moms who let them watch TV all day long or play video games all day long, or sole custody of moms who are partying and leaving the kids alone in the evening and at night. And, of course, there are bad dads, too. I don't want anybody to misunderstand me. But what I'm saying is the court needs if they insist on picking just one parent, which I don't agree with, but if they insist on picking just one parent, at least pick the best parent instead of just always picking the parent according to whether they're male or female.
Great. So what do you think the court is doing right, the system doing right, rather?
Well, I think the family courts is very little they're doing right. I think that in most states, the child support orders, the amount of child support that is ordered, is a lot more reasonable than it was 25 years ago when it was simply not enough money for the custodial parent to support a child. So the amount of child support is better in most states, but there's a million exceptions to that. And then the other big problem is the enforcement agency, which is a whole nother story. In other words, one issue is how much child support gets ordered to be paid. And I'm saying that's improved in most cases, but millions of exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
The whole business of how it's enforced is a huge mess. It's a morass. It's full of injustice. I mean, taking driver's license away from people who are doing their best, but who in this recession have lost their jobs, or their commissions are down, or they don't have the overtime they used to have. Enforcing that they should keep on paying what they were paying before, taking away their driver's license, putting them in jail, harassing them, seizing the bank account that they needed to get the transmission fixed on their truck so they could continue to earn a living, et cetera. There's all kinds of abuses in the enforcement part because they don't care about the human realities. They just care. The only thing they care about is collecting the money. So
do you
that's
think
a problem.
Okay.
Another area is the whole issue of the custodial parent, usually the mother, taking the children and moving far away. That one is in flux. Some states are making it harder for mom to do that. Some states are making it easier for mom to do that. And in general, they should not be doing this.
Okay. What is... Do you think that's a happy medium? How can, in your research, that the system can arrive at a happy compromise? I mean, it's unfair to take, you know, well, let's back up. We got to understand that, you know, the tax return is extra. But, you know, they
sorry,
can...
Sorry, say that again?
When it comes to tax returns, taking the licenses, driver's license, I mean, what can you do? If you take the person's driver's license, then they can't drive, and then it becomes another issue. If you're dealing with a professional license, like if you're a CPA or an attorney, you might only get, you know, you got to struggle to get cases. Taking a professional license and then leaves them just dead in the water, can't practice. And, you know, that they have to renew every year or sometime every 2 years. And putting them in jail, I don't see how you still going to get your money out because you still, even if they're in jail, they're still going to owe the same amount. So it's like you're going in a vicious circle. Any type of program you see that you guys have been working on to try to get a happy compromise, is that making sense?
Well, first of all, there are some child support payers who ought to be in jail.
Sure.
But you've pointed out correctly that for the person who is honestly trying in good faith to meet their obligation, and it's a fair obligation. The amount of child mm-hmm. support is a fair amount. This is a counterproductive policy. So that's number one. While they're in jail, the amount of child support just keeps going up. By the way, they can't earn money while they're in jail, and so the child support owed just keeps increasing while they're in jail, which just gives them a huge mountain to climb when they get out of jail. So this has to be put back in the hands of judges instead of bureaucrats, which is whose hands it is in right now. Right now, it's not a mistake. It's on purpose. They took it out of the hands of judges, and they put it in the hands of bureaucrats and lawyers whose only interest is collecting the money. They don't care whether this is helping the children, not helping the children, whether this is helping the family as a whole, whether it's fair, not fair, whether it's going to make the problem better or worse. They don't even look at that. They just collect the money, and they'll do anything they can to collect the money. And so this whole problem's got to be put back in the hands of the judges.
Wow. Yeah, I was reading an article, and I was trying to find it, I think, after we talked, and I saw this article somewhere out of Texas, but I couldn't get a reprint. It was kind of a sad scenario. This licensed plumber was put in jail, and he's struggling. He said, he had to pay his employees and expenses first. He pay himself last, and sometimes he don't get a check in a week or 2 weeks.
Right.
In order for him to keep going.
That's small business. That's real life for a small business.
So when it got time to renew, they took his license. And then now he has all these people, and it became a bigger issue. So he had to go and get a partner to partner his business in order for him to continue to go on. They put him in jail. And he still ended up owing more, and he had to go fight that, and it took him 6 months, and he still kind of get the resolve. In another case, I saw that a person who was put in prison for years, and they assessed child support on him while he's in prison. He had a 10-year sentence, and at the end, not only he had to pay his fees to the system that they pay, he also had to pay back child support, which put his parole in jeopardy, and he would never be able to. He said, "I would never be able to pay this." And why,
right,
after being in jail for 8 years, and you can't even say that this is minimum wage? It's a spiral circle. And Legal Aid took up his case, and they're still kind of working on it. But it's kind of a really sad scenario. He's incarcerated on a 10-year sentence for 8 years, and he's paying child support.
Yeah.
On minimum wage, and when he gets out, now he's not only facing his $20 he had to pay every single month when he visits his parole or probation officer, I'm not sure what they call it, but also they are putting his parole in jeopardy because now he owes back child support.
Yep.
And he goes to jail. It's like a vicious circle. He said, "I would just rather go back to jail and not worry about this issue."
Yeah.
So it was kind of
and
really
how does that
a
help
sad
the kid?
Scenario.
You know,
it didn't help the kid at all.
Yeah, exactly. So the whole idea of this is to help kids, and it doesn't help kids. I'd like to talk about poor people now, too, because
sure.
A big part of the child support arrearages, that is, past due amounts that are behind when someone is behind on paying their child support, the large majority of the problem of arrearages is among poor people. And these are people who are earning less than $10,000 a year. So when you really go up in the helicopter and look at what we're doing on child support policy for poor people, we're doing something very strange. In general, in our society, we understand the fact that society as a whole has an obligation to help out poor people to the best of our ability. And you can have arguments about bigger benefits or smaller benefits, and we have those political arguments. But everybody agrees that to some extent, those mm-hmm. people who are more fortunate in life have some kind of obligation to the poor to help them out. And that's what we do as a society. Now, there's one huge exception to that. And the huge exception to that is child support orders among poor people. Think about it for a minute. What you're basically saying, when you tell a very poor man who's earning, $7,000 a year, $8,000 a year, when you're telling him to pay an amount of child support that he can't pay, you tell this guy you got to pay $100 a week. For him, that's a fortune. He can't pay $100 a week. That's $5,000 a year. That's, that's two-thirds of what he earns. What's he going to live in, a refrigerator box? So what you're doing in a situation like that is you got certain poor people, namely the mother and the child, and
mm-hmm.
we're saying, oh, no, society is not going to help out this poor mother and her poor child. We're going to make another poor person help out the poor people. The other poor person is dad. They're all poor people. And in this one instance, what we're saying is, oh, poor people have got to be supported by other poor people. Instead of saying, you know what, society's got to step up to the plate. Those who are more fortunate have to step up to the plate.
Wow. That's something else. In your organization, I was just going through your About Us, and it goes to, I think, your different vision. Can you talk about your organization's mission what you guys do?
Our mission is to improve the lives of children by ensuring that they have the love, care, and guidance of both parents after separation or divorce, with equal rights and equal responsibilities for mothers and fathers. That's our core mission right there. And then we've got all the satellite issues. So I've already talked about the fact that kids long for both their parents. When they don't have a lot of time with both their parents, they just feel a big hole in their heart. They feel incomplete. They feel sad. They feel depressed. They long for the parent that they rarely get to see. Mm-hmm. And then there's all the satellite issues that affects the central issue. So too high a child support order. What happens? Dad disappears. What happens to the child? Not only no more money, but no more dad. Another satellite, and we've talked about that one. Let's take the small businessman, the plumber, or other small businessman that we talked about. You impoverish that guy, what have you done to the child? You've basically emasculated their father. You've made him from a self-respecting man with dignity who runs his own small business into a guy who's living without dignity, is living in a single-room occupancy in the basement someplace, and in the eyes of his children, he's just a shell of what he once was. So that's not helping children. Then the move-away issue. If you're telling custodial parents, oh, yeah, you want to move to California, no big deal. What are you doing to that child? You're taking away their father. And so you go down the list of the issues, and they're also, I call them satellite issues because they all revolve around the central issue, which is that children need two empowered, loving, nurturing, present parents in their lives.
Great. Any research that shows, I think, with, especially on the poverty level, with women raising boys, any of your research has shown that in that particular case, and within the court system, we're always having these shootouts. You have these gangs, guys, young men or young boys, longing for that father image, and they go into a gang type situation because it gives them all the comfort and all the love that they were missing from their dad. Now they have it within this particular gang. Any research that shows that, hey, at a certain point, should this 12-year-old boy, while he's still at that mid-age point, let's start shifting towards going to the male role. Mom, you have taken care of your son all these years, but if the guy, dad needs to really step in, can the dad step in at that point and just start shifting that way so he doesn't go into this situation of dealing with gangs or whatever? Any research that you guys have done?
Yeah, there's tons of research.
Okay.
People can go to our website at fathersandfamilies.org. That's fathers, A-N-D, families, no punctuation, all one word, .org, O-R-G. And you can click on resources, and you can find some of that literature. There's tons of literature that show that as boys start to get into to be 10, 11, and 12 years old and into their teenage years, that the presence of a dad, either in the home or actively present as a non-custodial dad, is a huge factor in decreasing their delinquency, their truancy, their involvement in gangs, their involvement in violence, and their involvement with the law. That research has been done, among other people, by a researcher named Rebecca Coley, who's at Boston College. Looked at minority neighborhoods in three different cities around the country and found a striking result of the type I just described to you. So there's tons of research about that. There's also research about the effects of the presence of dad on his daughters. His daughters do much better, too. It's from dad that they learn about the fact that they are lovable people, that males will love them for who they are, not just for wearing a very short skirt and a revealing blouse, that males will love them because they are good people, and also it forms their entire relationship. It helps them form their adult relationships with men, much sounder and healthier relationships. And this might really surprise your listeners, but the data is also clear that teenage pregnancy goes way down when there is a dad either in the house or actively involved as a non-custodial parent. really, there's, you know, one dad looking at his 14-year-old daughter and saying, you know, Heather, you get back upstairs because you're not going outside looking like that, dressed like that, is worth 10 social workers. One dad sticking his hand out and saying, give me the car keys. You're not going out like you're not going out tonight. You're grounded. You have not done your homework. You're not dressed properly. And also, I know that you're going out and secretly drinking. Again, that dad is worth 10 social workers.
Wow. So why do you think moms are, I'm going to say not effective, is to a point that they start to really lose control when the kid becomes a teenager, that, hey, you know, your son is 6'3", you're 5'5", and even though you have the power and authority, it gets to a point that it's like, hey, you know, I'm going to press this. You know, children will take you to a limit, but you really don't have any control once they walk outside the door and you not got it in their hand.
Well, there are some women who have very forceful personalities, and they don't have that problem.
Mm-hmm.
But in a lot of cases, the dad is really seen as the disciplinarian in the house, in the home or in the family, for whatever reason. And I'm not sure it has to be that way, but it is often that way. And so, as you just said, a lot of moms will say, you know, when he got to be 14 years old, I just lost all control over him. He just did what he wanted to do, and I had no ability to affect it. But you know what? A lot of moms are saying that about their daughters, too. They're saying, you know, she
Absolutely.
Got to be 13, and all of a sudden I was the dumbest person on the face of the earth. And not only that, but she just started to run wild, and I couldn't control her at all. Happens all the time. Now, I'm not saying that dads also don't have shortcomings as parents. They often do. That's why we believe, that's why fathersandfamilies.org, we're not trying to take kids away from mothers and give them to fathers. We believe the kids need both their parents because the parents bring different ways of parenting, different morals, different guidance, different ways of looking at the world, and the children benefit from both of those.
Absolutely. When I taught school, I always told parents that your child has two lives. They have the life that you spend with them at night before they go to bed and have on the weekend. As at teachers, we have them for 40 hours a week,
That's a little
bit more than you have, and we have the real personalities. This is how they're going to act in the real world. And they need to keep in mind, hey, your child has two personalities, the way he's going to act with you, the way he's going to act in the world. And that's pretty much what you said in a nutshell about this whole parenting issue. You know, both have their roles that they have to take, and, you know, fathers need to be involved with their child or children. And your research has showed that. You have research on that. And anything you would like to leave with us, with our listeners, about your program as a closing thought?
Absolutely. Two closing thoughts. If you're a small business person, a skilled tradesman like a plumber or a professional person, you need to see that the laws about divorce in your state are fair and balanced because it is a huge threat to the viability of your business. And anyone who has any questions about that, they ought to feel free to contact me at fathersandfamilies.org. They'll see how to contact me. Secondly, and more generally for everybody, I would say that, actually, I will direct this to mothers. Mothers, you tend to have the upper hand in family court. If you take that upper hand, if you take advantage of that upper hand and you get sole custody of your kids and you don't actively see to it that they have a lot of time with their dad, you may feel like you've won in the short run, but you're hurting your child. And your child needs that dad, even though you don't like him anymore. That your child loves that man and has a lot to learn from him. So I would say on behalf of your children, you have to have the strength of character to say that even though this judge is willing to hand me a victory and will make me feel good because I'm angry at that guy, my child needs their dad.
Wow. There's no victors in this. Thank you, Dr. Huston.
Thank you. I really
appreciate you joining the program today, and I appreciate your time.
You
Again, thank
good
you.
Care. It's an honor
okay,
to be on
great.
The show.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you want to get more information on Fathers and Families, feel free to go to their website, fathersandfamilies.org, fathers spelled out and spelled out families spelled out .org. They have a lot of great information. Again, if you look at the news link, they have information from all over the country, from newspapers to blogs to court decisions, from TV interviews that can give you information. And also they have a research area that you can go and look at some cases that will kind of help not persuade your maybe the other spouse, persuade the court, or go in your favor to kind of give you equal rights. Thank you for listening to the program today. Again, Tim Jacquet, your host with the Core Business Show. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For more information about equipment financing and asset-based loans, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. Or call us at 866-611-7457. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to the Core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. And thanks again for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.